have you ever used your art for vengeance?
I don't think so. Like if I had a murder podcast and I framed somebody I didn't like, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anything? I don't know. Maybe like your calendar. Do you put like some evil in there to get back at somebody?
What about you?
I don't know.
You're the professional artist.
I guess. Yeah. Have I made any vengeful glass art recently? mostly it's happy. Maybe I've used it for therapy, which, you know, you can go listen to my other podcast about that,
yes.
which is called Make Do. But I don't think I've used it for vengeance. No.
That's good.
Well, not yet.
If you did, someone may feel like they have to intervene on your behalf. We'll get to that.
So we are talking about the episode, season 9, episode 14, Vandalism, which originally aired on January 31st, 2013. Does that date sound familiar to you, Stephen?
Yeah, this initially aired the same evening as Junior Salesman, which we talked about last week, but they are two distinct episodes. It's not a part one and part two that then, you know, gets divided later for syndication purposes. These were two separate episodes that played together. This was the evening of the 30 Rock finale, and so I guess NBC went all out.
Yeah, I did a bit of a deep dive because I thought kind of some of the fan websites might have been wrong with their dates, and I made sure to like back up my information here and make sure that it actually was the same date. And yeah, I couldn't figure out like why it was done, but it was absolutely done. It says very clearly that they both aired on the same day. This episode was also directed by Lee Kirk, who is Jenna Fischer's real life husband. And if you remember, I don't know if you remember or our listeners remember, or I'm not even sure if we mentioned it or not, but he was also the lactation consultant in the episode, The Delivery. So this is his first time directing an episode of The Office.
You want to make a C shape with your hand. I'm doing the hand motion.
You got it. You got it.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yep. This is a quite a hectic episode. There are three plots, but they are pretty intertwined. At some point, you have a phone call in Scranton to somebody in Philly, and like both plots are happening at the same time. So there's a lot of back and forth in this one. This was another episode, like many others in this season, kind of hard to take notes on, kind of hard to pull apart the different plots, but we will, I think we'll get through it.
Well, we can certainly start with the cold open.
Yes.
So Daryl is leaving early on the weekends, I guess on Fridays or so, and possibly other times, to go and work in Philly, which we already know that he got hired at Jim's company. And Aaron is helping him out be a sneaky sneak and get out of the office without anyone knowing. Although everyone knows and Daryl's just kind of taking vacation time. So he's not even really sneaking. I mean, although who would find him from sneaking because Andy's not there still. But Aaron is having a good time creating a diversion for Daryl.
Everybody knows I go to Philly. I've just been using sick days I saved up. But Aaron was so excited about being sneaky sneaks, I went along with it.
Yeah, there's a couple of shots in this episode. Pam mentions, oh, you know, our boss is in the Caribbean. And like, just people are mostly getting their work done, but they're also not necessarily always getting their work done. And yeah, there's some chaos happening without anyone in charge.
You know, and Creed's flying that kite. That's part of the main episode. It's so good.
It is very funny.
It's just a few seconds of him with the fan and the kite in the office. It's really good.
Who hasn't wanted to fly a kite while staying inside?
I mean, it seems so chill. I kind of like it. It's a vibe.
Yeah. So what order do you want to go in? Do we want to talk about the mural or the senator or Philly?
So I was thinking about this, and like you said, it is like kind of intertwined, and my notes are all over the place. But I was also thinking how simple this episode was. Like, the plots are so simple. I feel like each one can be basically summed up in a sentence. And we'll go through and we'll talk about it. But like, one is Pam's mural gets vandalized. Two, the senator has a party and Angela and the senator kind of fight over who is invited, and the party is for Philip's birthday. Three, Daryl and Jim are roommates, and Daryl is tidy and Jim is messy, and comedy ensues. So, like, that's basically it. I mean, like, there's more to each plot, but I felt like, you know, there are these pretty basic things going on in each one.
Yeah, yeah, none of them are too complicated. Really, I think the complexity of the episode comes where these intersect with each other.
Mm.
But maybe we start, let's start with the senator's party. How about that?
Okay.
I think that's the, sort of the most straightforward one.
Yeah, that one's the most outlier that we can like work through first. So Angela is throwing a birthday party, a first birthday party for her Philip. And it's mostly for campaign donors, no kids or coworkers.
Yeah.
Because ew.
Kids. Ew.
It's Philip's first birthday, and the senator and I are hosting a party at our house.
Oh, cute. So there'll be a bunch of kids.
No, no children. Our house is not kid friendly. Most of our furniture is sharp. Also, ew.
Also like that she asks if she can leave early from work today when we know Daryl is sneaking out for days at a time.
Yeah, as she comes dressed up very political.
Yeah.
She has kind of like a Jackie O look to her, and she's all ready for this party. We find out that Oscar is also invited, even though Angela just made a whole speech about coworkers not being allowed to come, that they didn't make the cut. But the senator personally invited Oscar, so that's still going on. And mm-hmm. we also get some more information that it seems like Angela and the senator, state senator, have a little deal going on. They have an arrangement.
They have an arrangement. He's not to be seen in public with Oscar. She later says, you know, how embarrassing the whole thing is for her. But this is in public, right? They're having people to their home. Important political people in this greater Scranton area, I guess. And Angela's really unhappy with it. You know, Oscar says that the senator wants him there for support. And Oscar has this talking head about, you know, Angela's husband and I are in love, but he still needs like the, you know, the conventional family, you know, picture with the wife and the kid for political reasons. And Oscar's kind of the secret, and I think he's enjoying being the secret, but it's clearly upsetting to Angela.
It is definitely clearly upsetting to Angela, but I feel like it's upsetting to Angela in a public sense.
Mm.
She doesn't seem to, like, there never really seemed to be a lot of love between her and Robert, so that's probably why this arrangement was possible in the first place. That's what I'm assuming. But because the senator invited Oscar, Angela says that she is therefore going to be inviting her own stud, and she goes directly to Dwight.
Dwight can't because he's busy helping Pam with revenge, which we'll talk about in a little while. Yeah, Dwight's busy, and so Kevin, who has been angling to get into this party, is like, oh, I overheard that there is an opening that Dwight couldn't go.
Hey, so a little birdie just told me that Dwight can't come to your son's birthday. So do you want me to go with you?
No.
Okay, I understand. I'll just stay here then, alone with the money.
Oh, crap.
So Kevin gets the invite, and later on we get some great scenes over at the party. But we find out the senator had a different motive for having Oscar there than just his secret relationship with him. He kind of is having him there because of his race.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gross.
Now, does my embrace of Hispanics make me more electable given demographic trends? I don't know. And I don't care. What I care about is Oscar. My friend. Mi amigo. Oscar. Maybe I should be insulted that he only invited me here to be his token Mexican friend, but he could have invited any number of Hispanics that he knows. His gardener, Rogelio, or he could have invited Rogelio, but he chose me. Rogelio's Malaysian. The son of a bitch is Malaysian.
Yeah, he like puts his arm around him. He calls him his amigo. It's icky on the senator's part. And it's so transparent, you know, basically immediately to Oscar. And then there's this group photo, which is when it really all comes to a head. So Oscar is there. They bring in like an old lady in a wheelchair. And then there's this guy who is, I guess he's working on like the wait staff for the party. And he's like the only black person in the room. And they call him over and like the campaign manager calls him by the wrong name and has him in the photo. Like it's not a good look for the state senator.
Angela gets kind of moved around. She's very much angling for the look of her relationship and not, you know, actually for the senator. But I really like how at the end of this party, when they're kind of having this receiving line goodbyes, that Kevin's the one that calls out the senator on his BS and his like terrible treatment of the people that care about him. And how he's kind of a terrible person. So go Kevin for standing up for both Oscar and Angela.
Kevin, great to see you.
Yeah. Thank you for the food. Oh, and also, you suck.
I beg your pardon.
You are like a terrible person. These guys care about you, and you're just using them. Again, the food was very good.
I love that it's Kevin. You know, Kevin is the one that these two have in common, I guess, outside of the senator, and he takes him to task. And I really like it. And Robert looks kind of stunned. Like, he's definitely not used to people talking to him this way, but he just sort of like looks like, I can't tell if he like realizes what he's done or he's just kind of in shock of what Kevin said. But yeah, go Kevin. I mean, Kevin speaks truth to this guy. Like, look, both of these people care about you and you're just using both of them and hurting them. And I really liked that Kevin stood up for his friends here.
And we get, you know, the rare moment of Kevin being insightful and thoughtful. And I think that that's really good. But it's also punctuated with him complimenting the food over and over again.
Yeah.
Which is great. I wonder if the senator is so shocked because now someone else knows about him and Oscar. Because maybe. Kevin knows like all the deets.
Yeah, Kevin's known for quite a while.
So that's basically the first birthday party with the senator. Maybe we should go back to some vandalism.
Yeah. Pam goes down to the warehouse. She's going to work on her mural some more. And she's talking to the camera and telling about the painting and how she's happy with how it's turned out. And then she sees that two orange butts have been painted on it. And on the right-hand side, someone painted "This sucks." And she is just, at first she's speechless, obviously very angry and hurt. And she's going to demand, with the help of a megaphone and a lift, that the guilty person in the warehouse come forward.
Attention, everyone. Can I have your attention, please? Yeah, I don't know everybody's name down here, but whoever did this, will you please raise your hand? Hello? This is not over, okay? I will stay up here all day if I have to. Is that what you want? Yeah, I will also come down if I want to. It's my choice.
Pam, in the beginning of this episode, feels very alone.
Yeah.
And she feels like she has no support. Like, no one in the warehouse is listening to her talking up on the lift. Nobody even cares. Val, like, closes the door to the office and everyone's completely ignoring her. Someone just vandalized her hard work, so it's obvious that she's not wanted down there. And then she doesn't really have anyone to go to upstairs. You know, she mentions that Jim is gone, that Andy is gone, so there's no, like, authority for any of this. She feels pretty alone, and while she's confessing this to the camera, the boom mic comes down and, like, bops her on the head to remind her that Brian is also there, which I thought that was kind of... I thought that was cute. I feel like it might have been like one of those things like that could have happened previously, like stuff like that, but they just cut it out and they don't put it. But now that we have Brian involved so much, we have like these little glimpses that are like kept in, you know, if you want to think of it that way, in that meta way.
But someone should get fired over this, right? Val's no help. Andy's gone. Jim's out. I just feel like I'm on my own here. I mean, okay, not completely on my own, but in terms of people who can do something. Thank you, Brian.
I mean, she's not wrong. Like, she is alone. In fact, the rest of this episode, we don't get any indication that Jim is aware of what's going on. I think that's really evident, actually, in the tag, the very closing of this episode, which we'll get to, that this, she has not told Jim about this, or if he knows, we're not aware of it. So she's going to hold a conference room meeting to get people involved. And she says, oh, it's a secret meeting called by David Wallace, which, of course, gets Dwight's immediate attention. But people aren't super into the idea of doing anything about it.
Pam, what can be done?
Yes, thank you. Let's answer that question.
I was politely saying nothing can be done. I thought I was clear.
What? Come on, guys. We need to figure out who did this and punish them. This isn't just about me. This is about all of us. This is our mural. Don't you see how much we worked on this? How much time and energy we put our heart and soul into this thing?
David Wallace called this meeting?
Sure did. I was as surprised as you, but apparently he is very passionate about public art.
No, come on, guys.
Don't go.
Yeah, no one seems to care. Aaron has a funny back and forth with Pam about, you know, what vandalism actually is on a mural.
Someone defaced my mural. They painted all over it.
I thought that's what you were doing.
Yeah, but this is different.
Oh, they use worse paint than your paint.
I don't think so, but they put paint where I didn't want paint, so.
I thought you wanted paint on the whole thing.
Different colored paint? Yeah. I wanted different colored paint in the spots where they put their paint, so it just is okay.
So everyone just kind of leaves like, you know, you're just complaining, you know, you're doing this frivolous thing and now you're upset. But there are two people after the meeting that stand up with Pam, and that's Dwight and Nellie.
Pam, I'll help you.
You will?
If there's anything I hate worse than art, it's crime.
Thank you.
I am in too, Pam.
Yeah?
Yes, of course. I believe in you. I believe in your art. And I am bored.
Great.
And so they are now part of Pam's vengeance team.
I was hoping for a righteous mob. I ended up with Dwight and Nellie. But they both have a mob mentality.
I mean, honestly, like, if you're going to get two people to help, not the worst two people to help with a vengeance plot.
I like where this brings the Dwight Pam relationship, because as they are enacting vengeance, Dwight starts to find Pam a little attractive.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of funny.
Normally, I find Pam to be a comforting, if unarousing, presence around the office, like a well-watered fern. But today, she has tapped into this vengeful, violent side, and I'm like, wow, Pam has kind of a good butt.
Their first step in trying to weed out who this vandal was, is that Dwight is going to have everybody draw some butts, and he is going to compare them to the butts on the wall and to suss out our vandal.
I am handing out pieces of paper on which you will draw one human butt. What I do with said drawings is no one's business but my own.
You're going to compare them to the butts up there?
Incorrect. It is my fetish. Oh, also sign them. My fetish is signed drawings of butts.
It's not Dwight's most well thought through plan. He has to explain that signed photos of butt drawings are his very special thing. And Frank, who's one of these warehouse guys, like calls him out on it. It's like, no, you're gonna get us to draw this and you can compare them with what got painted up there. And honestly, I'm a little disappointed in Val in this episode, because when Pam is up on the lift trying to talk to the warehouse worker, she like shuts her office door, and then while this is going on, she tells everybody to get back to work. Like, I kind of feel like Val should have been a little more unhappy that one of her employees did this.
Yeah, I agree. She's playing it a little laissez-faire of like, I'm not going to, you know, be involved with this. I'm not going to waste my workers' time. But at the same time, it was one of her workers that did this. So, yeah, I'm kind of sad that she doesn't step up. But the second tactic that Dwight and Pam and Nellie decide to use is that they are going to separate the weakest from the herd, which is Nate, And with very little probing, they get him to confess on who did it. And he points out this warehouse worker, Frank.
They get Nate roped in by saying that his mom is sick. Apparently this is something Dwight has done several times, because it's like, oh, she still needs more rest, and oh, she'll recover again. Like, Nate seems pretty easy to play. And yeah, we learn through the promise of chewing gum that is not actually real, that it's this Frank guy. And we don't know Frank. I'm not even sure we've even seen Frank before, but he's a big guy. We kind of get the sense that he's kind of rough and tough. And Nate says that he's the one who did it.
So they call Frank up into the office to kind of have a disciplinary meeting with him, but things don't go very smoothly. Pam tries to talk with him, tries to get him on her side, tries to empathize a little bit, like, I know why you did this. She does talk down a little bit to him, but at the same time, he does not take it really well. He basically curses at them and says, there's nothing you could do, I'm out. And yeah, the meeting goes horribly. Toby has no backbone and refuses to stand up to anything. And Frank says, you know, you can't do anything. Like, you can't even fire me.
Yeah, Toby is like, this is his chance, right? This is his chance after a decade to, like, stand up for Pam or, like, be on her side. And he just can't do it. He just is mumbly and doesn't really say anything. And Nelly and Toby are kind of on the same page. They're like, well, you know, it's complicated. He said sorry a couple of times in there, and they're sort of just mumbling and not doing what Pam wanted. And this is when she turns to Dwight. You know, Nelly wasn't any help. Toby wasn't any help. Val's not doing anything. So she's going to turn to Dwight to take this guy down. They're going to go scorched earth on that guy's face.
That sucked. He didn't apologize. There's no talking to that guy.
Oh, your little feelings party didn't work out, huh? Who won the hugging contest? No, let me guess. Everyone tied for first.
We should just take him down.
Wait, are you saying...
I'm saying we should go scorched earth on that guy's face.
So their plan is, well, I guess Dwight's plan is that he's going to get Clark, his go-to guy here,
yeah,
and make Clark a mole to go into the warehouse and get some information on Frank.
Yeah, they have this very over-the-top thing of like, oh, you have to work down here now. Don't come back upstairs. And we see that the warehouse didn't buy this, because later on he's taped to a chair. So Clark's not having a great day. He had a better time with Jan than he did with the warehouse guys.
I mean, he might have been taped to a chair then.
That's
too. So
probably the most normal thing that happened to Clark when he was with Jan.
So Pam decides to take a more rational approach, I guess, and she calls up Daryl and asks about Frank. Daryl admits that it wasn't his hire, but he does reveal to Pam that his favorite thing in the world is his truck. And so Pam has all the information she needs, except for maybe the license plate number, but
which Dwight really wants.
But now they know they have a target to vandalize something of his, because he vandalized something of hers.
This made me wonder how many people know their own license plate numbers. You know, sometimes like you go park somewhere and you have to like put your license plate in a machine to pay for parking. And I know my license plate number, but I feel like a lot of people maybe don't. Do you know yours?
No. Yeah, no, see? I don't.
So 50% of people who host this show don't know their license plate number. Okay.
For some reason, an AN5 rings a bell, but I've no idea. No idea. That could have been anything.
Yeah. While they're on the phone, they also talk about Jim, which we'll get to, but so Daryl has given them this tip that this guy is all about his truck. And so Dwight and Pam are going to vandalize the truck. We learn in a little bit that the paint just washes right off, right? They're not doing actual permanent damage to this guy's vehicle. Obviously, that would be terrible and a crime. So
right,
they're not going to do that. Dwight is painting on the tailgate, a picture of the mural. And Pam has painted, like, if you look at the truck from the side, you would see Frank's head and then like the painted body. And he's got like, he's like poops coming out of him and stuff. Very unflattering. They're pretty happy with their work.
I'm done. What are you? Is that supposed to be my mural? Yeah, Frank draws a butt on your mural. I'm drawing your mural on Frank's truck's butt. Eye for an eye, mamacita.
Aw, Dwight, that's really sweet.
Let's see yours.
Oh, no, I'm embarrassed. It's stupid.
This is amazing! Frank! And he's leaving a trail of poops?
Yeah. And he has saggy boobs.
I saw that. It's great!
I feel better.
Good. I'm glad you feel better. This has been a wonderful day. I have to say, I like hanging out with a vengeful bitch.
I know. You miss Angela, don't you?
Ugh, don't sympathize. You're ruining the mood. Back to work. Draw his penis.
Pam is talking to the camera outside about this and how she's really happy with how it's come off, that it's a lesson that he will learn. And then Frank comes out of the building yelling at her that it's a $40,000 truck. How dare you damage it? Pam yells back that you started it. And then Frank moves towards her aggressively, saying someone needs to shut you up. And this is when Brian, the sound guy, comes into frame. He hits Frank with the boom microphone and then like throws his gear on the ground and is going to fight him. And the camera swings around and we see other crew members that Pam was looking at when talking. And they sort of like get in there and like separate Brian and Frank. But yeah, it escalates really quickly in the parking lot.
I got back at Frank in the most fitting way possible with my art. You know, the paints are water-based. It's going to come off with a hose. But I think the lesson will last a bit.
My truck? You had no right.
You know, you had no right.
It's a $40,000 truck.
So? You started it.
So? So someone needs to shut you
up. Hey.
Whoa.
Easy. Son of a bitch.
Guys.
You're going to hit a woman. Get out of here.
Yeah, and Pam like skirts behind one of the cars to get out of the way of everything. It becomes a whole scene. And
yeah,
it kind of made me think about how when the criticism of like the entry of Brian, like, why didn't they stop Michael from jumping off the roof with the bounce house? Why didn't they stop, you know, the knee clubbing with Oscar? And none of those things, like now that I'm thinking about it and comparing it to this moment, none of those moments escalated to
violence
like this point. Yeah, like it was never like an actual aggressive violent thing towards somebody else. It was always like super calm. I mean, even when Angela intervened with the sandwich delivery, she's like, not now. Like it was just, it was so mild. Like there was no forward motion of aggression like this was. Like this is like he's coming after her.
Yeah, I think the closest thing is when Roy comes in and is gonna attack Jim, but Dwight intervenes so quickly. And I mean, this dude is in love with her, or at least has a crush on her, or has feelings for her in some way, right? So that's also an element here that may not have been true in the past. But at the end of the day, Brian is going to lose his job over this. And we see Pam and Brian talking in the closet in between Meredith and Kevin. This was a door they tried breaking down in Dwight's fire back in the season 5 season opener. But I guess there's a room back there, not an exit. Who knows?
But that's also where Jim and Pam like got it on when they were looking to like have sex in the office.
Yeah.
So they were back there, too. But I love that that ends up being the production office. Like it has all the sound cables. It has like crew lockers. It's kind of the perfect place for a production office if you're thinking about them like over, like taking over an area in order to house all their gear, because they're going to be there every single day. And we've never seen in there before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks just like those rooms look in real life. Like, and Pam says that she's going to go talk to the producers and, you know, he shouldn't be fired. He was just protecting her. And
we also find out that Frank was fired.
Yes, yes. We learned that Frank was fired as well, which he definitely should have been, like, no questions asked. And we get Brian apologizing, you know, for the about the mural and the situation.
Well, I'm going to say something to the producers.
No, it's...
You shouldn't be fired. I mean, you were just protecting me.
It's all good. I knew what I was doing. I'm sorry about your mural, though. I mean, because you put so much into that.
Forget about my mural. It's stupid.
No, you worked hard on that. That guy's an animal. I'm glad they're firing him, too.
It's crazy.
Brian, I'm so sorry.
Look, I don't want to put myself where I don't belong. If you ever need me, you just call me, and I'll be there for you.
Thanks, Brian.
See ya.
And then Pam is kind of left alone. Again, I think reinforcing what we saw at the top of the episode, that Pam feels very alone. And now we see her in this room, literally standing by herself. And that shot really jumped out at me.
Especially because it's followed by Jim's voiceover at the end, like his little speech about being in Philly, mm-hmm. which he mentions right away in that. So we have the visual of Pam like by herself. And then we have Jim talking about how much fun Philly is.
Yeah.
Wow. This whole Philly thing has been so much fun that I may have lost sight of what really matters. I mean, having fun is not nearly as important as being good to the people who you really care about. I mean, that's just roommates 101.
And I was like, ooh, because like Jim's over there, which we will talk about. It doesn't get super deep, but like Jim's over there, you know, bacheloring it up like in this apartment with his friend and playing video games. And he's talking about like, oh, we really got to pay attention to the people that matter. And it's so much fun. And he's talking about, you know, Daryl. And yet we have Pam like going through all this crap over.
Yeah.
In the office, and that shot of her all by herself, it really stood out.
It definitely does. It is, it's quite striking. And this episode, there's no interaction between Pam and Jim. And I think that's very purposeful that we've seen the stress between them kind of building. And now this huge thing happens, and he's not only there, but he's unaware of it. And it's really striking that this is, you know, probably, I mean, this is a very traumatic thing for Pam to go through, from the mural to the fight, all of it, right? And he's just not there. And that's really painful. And there'll be ramifications for it later on.
So the Jim Daryl plot, basically, it's pretty simple. They are roommates. They got an apartment together, or at least Jim had gotten an apartment, and Daryl is joining him in so that they both have a place to crash while they have their time in Philly, so they don't have to like spend much money on hotels and all that. I think it's a smart idea. And it turns out that Daryl is super tidy, likes his things how he likes them. He decides to label everything. And Jim is super messy and has no awareness of his surroundings when it comes to, you know, using shirts as towels or stealing, you know, Daryl's food. And this causes a lot of tension between them. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had a roommate quite like this, or if you just had a very mismatched living situation. It gets very frustrating on both ends.
Hey.
We are splitting a sublet on a place near Philly.
Just a couple of grown, sexy-ass roommates.
And as much as I miss Pam and the kids, it's kind of nice to live the bachelor life again, you know, let your hair down.
Jim was nice enough to give me his bedroom.
I'm couching it.
Which usually means their clothes all over the living room.
And this dude labels his food. He's the clean one. I'm the messy one. How much fun is this?
Yeah, my college roommate, who was and continues to be a dear friend of mine. I was his best man. He was in my wedding. Like, we are still very close, even though he lives out of state now. We had a little bit of this. I wasn't quite to Daryl's level, and he wasn't quite to Jim's level, but we definitely had a mismatch in tidiness and the way we thought things should be done in our, you know, approximately 4-foot by 6-foot dorm room that we lived in for 2 years. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. And, you know, they're friends, right? They've known each other a long time. As Daryl points out multiple times, you know, Jim hooked him up with this job. Jim made this happen for him. But it is, it's a struggle for both of them as they see each other sort of in real life, right? Like, seeing people at work, seeing people at home, it's a very different thing. And Jim is leaning into the bachelor thing, like he's sleeping on the couch, there's clothes everywhere. Although we learn he is messy at home, because in that phone call when Daryl tips Pam and Dwight off about Frank loving his truck.
Well, I got you on the phone.
Your husband's like a sloppy homeless hobo. Can you fix that?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping you could. I gotta go, bye.
It's a very funny little interaction, but it is a bit of Yeah, a mismatch here, and it leads to some stress when Jim goes back to an old thing we've seen Jim do, where he is drinking out of someone else's mug.
That's right. He took the star mug, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's right. I forgot about that. But yeah, there's a bunch of bickering. There's a lot of passive aggressiveness from Daryl because he's trying not to say anything, but he just can't help it. They are quarreling. It's just a whole thing between them. And it's just a complete mismatch of roommates. It's not communicating. And eventually we do get a moment where, you know, they try to talk to each other about it. Something comes up with Daryl's favorite mug and Jim ends up dumping out the coffee.
Very passive aggressively. Like,
oh, both of them. Both of them.
Oh, yeah. Jim like hands it back to him. It sort of shoves it into his chest, you know, kind of childish. But they do eventually kind of after the mug thing, they try to get back on the same page. They're at home for lunch and Jim kind of calls Daryl on being too bit of a neat freak.
I think you might be going a little crazy with this labeling thing, man. I mean, you put your name on a 5-pound bag of flour. Are you honestly saying that if I needed flour, I couldn't use that?
What's your name flour for, Jim?
That's not the point.
What, you making bread?
No, I'm not making
bread. What
kind of
bread you making?
Daryl, it doesn't matter. Daryl, I think you know the point I'm trying to make.
They're kind of back on the same page, and then we learn that Jim deleted a bunch of TV shows off the TiVo that Daryl was looking forward to.
But we do eventually see Jim coming around of like, all right, I better clean this up. The relationship between, you know, with Daryl is way more important than living it up. I got to be a little bit more considerate. And so we see Jim putting in the effort and he puts in that effort and Daryl notices. And then we get a great scene of them, you know, being buddy buddy again, playing video games and hanging out. And Daryl even tries to be messy a little bit. He throws a can of soda on the floor when he was finished.
What a rebel.
I know. He'll probably pick that up later, though.
Oh, I think it killed him to do it.
So, yeah, that brings us to the end. We followed all of the plots.
This episode sets up quite a few things that we'll ride out really to the finale. So looking forward to all that.
And as a little side note, we will be taking next week off for a company wedding in Niagara. No, it's not in Niagara, but it really is a wedding. I'm taking off for a wedding. So we will be back in 2 weeks talking about the episode Couples Discount. And until then, you can go and find us on Twitter at @tall_beats, or you can find us individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can subscribe to become a member over at The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, access to our members-only bonus feed, including some bootleg episodes of shows, and you can also join us in the conference room, our members-only Slack. All right, Steven, let's go wash the butts off our truck. Because that's what someone was doing while we were recording, right?
I hate when butts get painted on my truck.
I know, it's the worst. Truck butts.